And I proudly proclaimed when many of my business friends or whoever medical school people were seemed to be proclaiming their jobs that would be get them on the fast track to bonuses or whatever it was, I proudly proclaimed that I wanted to be a teacher because hearts and minds are what I was all about. However, what I really realized in 2 years into teaching is that when I talked to my business friends, I was as ragged, as run down, and almost as stale as what they were. And the only difference was one of my friends was on top of the John Hancock building getting drinks, and I was drinking cardboard wine.
So you just heard a little excerpt from a keynote speech that today's guest, Lucas Jaden, was giving to a group of teachers about the importance of putting first things first, like really living out our mission. And what really struck me about this talk was the truth that he recognized or kind of brought up, which is we all get into teaching or coaching with this mission of making a difference. We pass up on the careers of chasing money and this kind of this hopes of finding fulfillment and like this something doing good for others. But so many of us, we kind of get lost in the journey or we even get beaten down. And that's a little bit of what we're unpacking here today with our first part of our conversation with Lucas Jaden. And Lucas is the founder of Inspire Sports, and he's a mental performance coach with Train to Be Clutch. And in this episode, he's going to share a little bit of his story, as well as have a very real conversation on this cost of pursuing greatness in our field of coaching. I know most of us, we want to be great at what we do. And many of us were willing to do the work, but I think what we struggle with as coaches is the knowledge that greatness doesn't just require sacrifice from ourselves. It comes at a cost to our families. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, brought to you by Thrive on Challenge. I'm JP Nurbin, joined by my friend and co-host, Nate Sanderson. Each week in about 30 minutes, we discuss important principles and strategies of transformational leadership. At Thrive on Challenge, we help coaches to raise the standards and strengthen the relationships in their program because we know this type of culture produces better leaders, better people, and better results. To learn more about how we can help you, go to thriveonchallenge.com, where you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter and get the coaching notes to every episode of this podcast. Lucas, thanks for joining us today. We're excited to learn from you. As you have a high level of experience and expertise as a mental skills coach with Train to Be Clutch, you've actually come up in a conversation or two on some previous episodes because of your impact with many coaches we know through Inspire Sports, an organization you founded in Wisconsin. But before we really start to dive deep on a few topics today that I'm looking forward to unpacking, can you start by sharing a little bit of your journey with us?
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you for having me, JP and Nate. I appreciate all the work that you're doing and creating this time for me to be a part of your journey. But for my backdrop, I'm from Freedom, Wisconsin. I still live in right outside of Freedom in Wisconsin yet. And, you know, growing up, I was the oldest in my kind of in my family, but also my extended family. I was very close with my cousins, and I kind of immediately took that leadership role, for better or for worse, for them. But that meant a lot of games outside. It meant just doing a lot of firsts and always having their support. And so that turned into some lot of cool things. Athletically, that was my passion. I played baseball, ran cross country, ran track, played basketball, just anything that I could compete in. And a lot of really good things for me growing up in high school. I had amazing teachers, amazing coaches. But one of my challenges was that I had a mind that never stopped moving. It was always thinking about the next thing. It was always kind of rolling. And so around my freshman year or so, there was a stretch of time where I went about 4 hours of sleep a night for, man, quite a few months. And just because I could not shut my mind down. And I think a lot of people now that I know have a similar challenge. But as a freshman in high school, I remember going to high school or going to school during the day and putting on kind of like this mask of I have it together. Like from the outside, I was who I wanted to be, you know, had great grades, fairly athletic, had good results. But internally, it was like, what is wrong? There wasn't alignment there. And so I really tangled myself up. Now, my parents were unbelievable at this time. For a freshman boy, I can still remember the night where I was like, finally, I'm like, I cannot do this anymore. And I was like, Mom. She comes into my room like, I don't know what's wrong, but like, something's not right here. And, you know, for a freshman boy, that what I know now through all of our research and from studying some awesome researchers is, you know, one of the scariest things for boys at that age is appearing weak. And I, at that time, this was like my ultimate weakness, that it really bound me up. And so the reason I start with that is because my journey through that at the time, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we didn't have mental training resources nearly as much and as available as what we have today. And so it kind of left me and thousands of other people like me in the dark, trying to figure out what's wrong. Why am I different? Mm. You know, that's when that voice, that little person voice that I teach about now really starts up of, man, you must be broken. Like, what are you doing wrong? You're never going to get out of this. And so my journey was a lot of hiccups and bumps through figuring out freedom. And I would, my work mentally is, how do I help people find just that? If I had a product to offer, I would say it's freedom. And freedom from not just outside limitations, but most importantly, our internal world. And the only reason that I could get there was because I started to work through it on my journey myself. College.
Can I jump in real quick there? There's just something about that story, and I don't want to miss this because I think it's really important. You, as a freshman boy, felt safe enough to at least be seen by your mother in that moment. What about that relationship? Because I think a lot of parents are listening that are coaches, this podcast, I know myself, like what was about that relationship that you, when you, if you reflect back on it, that created that safety that you were able to as a freshman, when mental health is not being discussed at all at this time in the world, really, it's not a topic. What about that relationship led you to feel safe enough to speak up?
Yeah, man. First off, thank you for asking that question, because I've never been asked that question. And I know, I mean, put it this way, my mom will be listening to this podcast. That's the relationship we have. I've done many of these over since the book came out. She listens to probably every one, because that's the, not because she cares about the result, because she just cares about me. And so would my dad. So for a long story short, I'll just share this one story. When I was in third grade, basketball was my thing. Like, I loved it, just like probably you too. Like, you had a sport or something. And I remember the floodlight nights, you know, playing out underneath the lights, and just late at night playing hoops. Like, those were the real games. But fast forward into my third grade year, we were playing a tournament, and it was one of those games where you played like 3 to 5 tournaments or games in a day. And I remember this game. It was the pinnacle of my athletic career. I scored 30 points in the game. Can remember it to this day. And now I'm saying this tongue in cheek, literally pinnacle of my career. But it was one of those days where the basket felt huge, and I get done with the game and my friends are like, wow. Like, I still remember this moment. Their parents come up to me, you know, probably thinking Lucas is going D1. Like, we're going to get a knuckle bump here. And it was just praise, you know, and I can remember going up to my dad and mom. They were at every game. And I go up to my dad and he gives me a half hug, and he's like, hey, you know, that was a great game. Nice work out there. I love the way you hustled. And he's like, all right, you go grab your stuff. Let's go get some lunch. And I remember that day, like, Dad, did you miss it? Like, did you miss 30 points? Like, I was on fire. And, so I remember going to lunch, just like, huh? Well, then of course I come back next game, and you can imagine how I played. You know, I can remember as high as the first one was, the low was even lower on the second one for how embarrassing, you know, I didn't shoot well, turnovers. Like, I just remember that feel, that prickly embarrassment feel. And so after the game, we shake hands for the other team. My teammates aren't storming up to me. Neither are their parents. And so who did I run to? My dad. Yeah. Because here's what I learned is that no matter what the situation was, my value to him came from who I was, not from what I did. And so what I mean by that is it came from me being his kid. My dad was never caught up in how many points are scored, or like, you know, like where I compared, or if I was en route to a scholarship, or whatever it might have been. It wasn't him. Like, it just wasn't. Neither was it for my mom. And the reason I bring up this story is that was my whole life. Like, I had aunts and uncles that were like this. My grandpa, who we wrote about Win in the Dark as the mentor, they all loved me for who I was way before about what I did. Sure, did they get excited when things went well for me? Absolutely. But I always had this deep conviction that they cared for me. And so to bring it back to you, where then does the trust come from in deep, dark, challenging moments to speak up? It comes from all the moments, in my opinion, prior to that, leading up, those small, seemingly insignificant moments where parents showed up to reinforce to their kid, your value comes from who you are, not from what you do. And when the toughness comes, when the storm gets crazy, you can come to me because that's not going to change. And so I had a distinct advantage in my life now because I still teach a class of 100 high schoolers every year around mental skills. And I've now realized how rare that is to have parents that have detached their worth from their child's performance. Mm-hmm. And so for me, just, you know, you can imagine all the daily interactions with my parents who loved for me and cared for me in that angle. I think that's why I have, you know, one of the reasons why.
No, I love that. Obviously, it's really inspired how you're approached, you know, the mental skills. I can definitely connect with a few things. One is just your mom, the fact that she's going to be listening to this podcast. It's like my mom who reads every article I send out. Occasionally she'll send me some thoughts when she disagrees with something I say as well. She has not figured out podcasts, which I'm kind of okay with right now. Honestly, it's too technologically advanced. So I could definitely connect with that. But
before we move on from the moms, I've asked this question over and over again, who's the best leader in your life? I've asked this to our pro organizations on down. Who's the best leader, the best servant leader in your life? And moms are always number one. And I want to really think about that, because in the Western, especially masculine driven world, we think we create the story that a quote unquote leaders, it looks different than that. But when you look to true effectiveness, like great organizations are getting the same result that my mom got. When hard stuff comes up, they get people to speak up. They don't have less problems. They have the ability to speak up and handle tough problems faster. So it's the same skill set that my mom was doing as a parent. But we screw that up a lot, right? It's not flashy to say, man, we're going to train our leaders and get really good at listening and reading facial cues and absorbing energy and being aware and present. So anyways, I just think that moms give us a unique insight to what great, great leadership truly looks like.
And maybe you've seen this too, but I think in my conversations with coaches, our role as a parent is obviously probably one of the most important roles that we have. But coaches like, hey, I want to get better at coaching, or I want to, like, how do I practice, or how do I work on these things that you're talking about when it comes to setting boundaries and consequences and discipline? I'm like, at home, like, there's no better way to work on all these things that we talk about than with the people that actually it means the most to, and we will have the biggest impact on, right? Is how we lead at home. If we can't do a good job there, I doubt we're probably going to do a great job anywhere else, right?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting point. And I would say, I think people can do a great job without doing a great job at home for a while. But it runs out. I see people all the time, and myself included in this, where I was getting stellar results from the outside, but then going home and being a shitty husband. So I think people are doing it right now all the time. They're being a great coach. They're being a great CEO. They're being a great teacher and absolutely exhausted or absolutely not present for their wife, husband, kids at home. And I say this with total love and compassion because I know what this feels like. And it's a slippery slope for how our mind works, that it's weird how we can put other people first that aren't the closest to us and put the closest people to us last. And for anybody who's listening who can resonate to that, you're not broken for that. That's just how our mind works on default. And so it takes some real intentionality, at least it has on my part, to do what you said, which is build your own house, put first things first, and lead from the inside out. And yeah, so I mean, I've worked with a lot of coaches, and I know myself the Trail of Tears pretty well. I don't know what coach brought it up, but said, you know, behind every high performer is a trail of tears. And if we go on default, usually those tears belong to the people that we love the most. Now, there's a cost to going all in on anything and pursuing mastery at the highest level. And I just always encourage the people I work with to make sure they know what the trade-off is that they're okay with.
I love that description, the trail of tears. Like, that's a great description for the cost of pursuing greatness, the cost to people in our lives. I mean, you're bringing up something we've touched on in many episodes of the podcast, and it's quite possibly one of the greatest internal struggles that many coaches face, which is what trade-off are we okay with? Coaching requires, in most cases, a sacrifice, not just of ourselves, but of our families and a lot of other important people in our lives. So my question for you is, like, where is this line? Like, how can a coach or a leader know the line where the trade-off is no longer worth this pursuit of greatness?
So my thought to that would be, we don't fully know, but my gut, you know, from is there comes the trade-off of, if you want to be in the top 1%, if you really want that. And I think what's interesting is there's nothing wrong with not wanting that. Like, there's nothing wrong with not wanting to be in the top 1%. But if you want to be in the top 1%, the physics of it just say you probably over time have to sacrifice more than the 99 other percent. Now, with that being said, though, if people do that out of fear, which I would argue most human beings, because we're organism based on default by survival, our brain is built to protect and predict. It's built to predict so it can protect us, right? And so on default, most humans are operating out of fear, just not to lose the next game, you know, just not to screw up, just not to lose. If we're operating out of fear while simultaneously making this type of sacrifice, then that's where the greatest issues come from. So for people that I work with that are making that highest sacrifice, which if you want to be in the top 1%, like I said, I do believe it just is part of it. But if you can't unlock yourself from being driven by fear, it's going to be a hole that continues to cycle downward. But getting unlocked from fear means being okay with what is, finding a sense of inner freedom while the outside might be crazy. And I think that then allows people, when they are home or when they are present, to be more present and to be there. And then the hiccups along that way, the challenges, the stressors that go along with being a coach, that being a parent, they're less of a detriment because they're not hammering the fear that's inside of us instead of just being an event that we move through. So that's just something that I would say is, when we make those big sacrifices, it's not the same. Some coaches go through that much differently than other coaches.
No, so I absolutely love that, Lucas, especially too, because one of the things you shared a second ago was just how, you know, you've experienced this kind of trap as well, like in your own pursuit and move forward. I think that's the fact that you've struggled with this as well, I think, you know, makes it even more real for us as we're listening here. You know, it's easy to talk about these things. I know that I fall into this trap. And honestly, it's kind of this thing where you're working so hard at that, you're making a difference out there in the world as a coach, as an influencer, as a leader. But at the same time, you go home and you can be a really crummy husband. You can be a really crummy father. And I think, you know, obviously one of the big things is just being aware of, like, when those things are slipping at home. But also, like, then what's the next step, though? Like, I think, like, you're just in this constant battle where I think coaches really struggle. I know so many college and high school coaches, they're like, I get it, I'm not the father I want to be, but, like, I'm not okay with settling for less, you know, when it comes to, I can't get, like, you talked about as a young boy, as a freshman, you couldn't turn things off in your head. Coaches go home, they can't be present with their families because all they are thinking about is the basketball game, the football game. Like, what advice do you have for coaches that are struggling with that?
Well, I would just say that struggled, when you say for me, I struggle with it, it's like past tense. And so I would say it's a very much I don't view it as much anymore as a struggle, but an opportunity for me to continue to evolve and become the best version of me. And I think life will allow us circumstances to show us where we're still caught yet, where we can still grow the most. And so for me, I would tell those coaches, like, you know, they are okay with letting something down. They are okay with, you know, not meeting their standard in a certain area, and that is their home life. And so to me, it's looking at what is the holdup there. And this is where a lot of people in the mental skills world go to tools and habits. And I think that they're great. I do think, you know, mindful meditation, something that I do on a daily basis, it is powerful. But habits aren't enough. You have to look below the surface subconsciously of what is driving that behavior in the first place. And so when I bring this up to coaches, like, what is your most limiting belief about yourself? What's the toughest mental challenge that you are facing right now? What does the sentence, what does that insecure, scared version of you use to remind you of your weaknesses? Like, what's a common sentence that runs through your mind that is limiting, that's beating you up at a deep level? What would you guys say? I mean, you're into the influencer world for yourselves or for the people you work with. What do you think is a thought that's operating below the surface, giving rise to a lot of these tendencies? What would you say comes up a lot?
I can't get it all done. Like, there's so much I have to get done. I can't get it all done.
What else, Nate? What do you think?
Well, I don't know, Lucas. I mean, I think there's always a handful of things, but it can be, you know, does this really matter? You know, when you're investing a bunch of time into whatever you're doing. I don't care if it's the coaching side, if it's, you know, I mean, I even sometimes think that way with, like, oh, geez, I'm out here playing in the sandbox with my kids. You know, does this really matter? Is this the best use of my time? So I think that's, you know, that's a haunting question every once in a while.
Absolutely. And so even with all of, you know, inside of those, I would even go further of, like, why do we have so many things? Like, a lot of coaches that I meet, I have them write down everything that they want to get done in their day. Going back kind of what you said, JP, and like, they have to take an hour to write down what they would like to get done. Now think about that. You know, it's setting ourselves up for perpetual letdown of ourselves. Always. Like, how many people at the end of their day do you talk to where they're like, I got everything done. I'm great. In fact, I finished 2 hours early. And you know what? I just relaxed. I chilled. You know, like, in our world, that's actually frowned upon. You know, you would be judged in a way that that's weakness. And so at a very much a deeper level, what we would get to if we unpacked it probably with you both or with coaches is this level of I'm not enough, or who I am as a person is dependent upon what I do. And when we, when our worth gets tangled up with the results that we're doing, we will always be overstuffed. We will always be a people pleaser to the outside versus internally to ourselves. And so I would just really unpack it even further of, yes, asking the question, does this really matter? I think that's a powerful, powerful question to sit down in from a place of security and ask yourself, what does really, truly matter? And because we're, as most humans, operating out of fear, we don't ask that question and we just say it always has to be more. I have to be doing more workouts. I have to be doing more calls. Whatever it is, more is always the answer to someone who's in fear because it has to do with uncertainty. So, I mean, what do you guys think? How do you think the brain that's built to predict and protect us likes uncertainty?
The fear of the unknown. It's creates massive, massive amounts of activity, that stress response system that is not overall healthy for us, for sure.
Yeah, where have you experienced uncertainty in the last few months, JP?
Well, just on Thursday, you know, we are going into our first game. I'm coaching a semi-pro team here in Ireland for basketball. And just on Thursday, they said game's canceled after we'd worked for 3 months to prepare for it because of COVID. So I think we're all facing a lot of the uncertainty of on a day-by-day basis, right?
Yeah. And so when you look at uncertainty, if people can just get this from the podcast, one of the elite skills that I see from leaders who last and who can get any semblance of putting first things first is they get really good at loving uncertainty. loving the feeling of I don't know doesn't mean it's not painful, but they don't run from it and avoid it. I think a lot of coaches can't get their mind off of whatever practice is tomorrow or doing more and more and more because it's uncertain. And if we just allow our brain to go on default, it's going to constantly search to help us find certainty. But if your game's tomorrow, okay, can you with any certainty tell me how your team's going to play?
Absolutely not.
And no matter what, I could ask you in 10 more years. Okay, based on all the technology that we now have, can you tell me tomorrow how your team is going to play? And the answer is going to be no. But if we don't figure out that by nature, life is uncertain, just as much as water's wet and fire's hot, life is uncertain. And just in that same realm, our brain is built to hate uncertainty, that there is this friction going on. You know, and I'm rubbing my knuckles together for those that are watching this. And until we can learn that I need to, instead of trying to eliminate uncertainty, that that is impossible. Do your controllables to put first things first and do your process. But then there will always be a layer of uncertainty. So instead of subconsciously just running from it, how good can you be at being present, being yourself, committing to your family, even with uncertainty present? And so for me, that is a very much a passion of mine because it's so deep rooted in our human nature to try and solve uncertainty. But a friend of mine puts it like, you know, is trying to pound a nail in with your forehead. Like it's just an impossible task. And the harder you hit it, the larger the headache it's going to give you. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I think this is when I asked athletes, the title of our book, Win in the Dark, came from a conversation of I was sitting with a bunch of baseball players in spring training. Some of them were major leaguers that were going to be, some of them were just working up in the system. And we asked them, what is the real toughest mental challenge that could get in your way of stopping you? And they all said or alluded to this uncertainty and the fear of judgment, the fear of failure. And what does that look like? They said, you know, it's not the 9 hours we spend out working out playing. We love this. You know, we love the physical grind. And that almost comes easily to them. What they said around the group, and it didn't matter if the guy was had his contract signed, guaranteed to make millions, or if it was the guy who was just trying to make it, was what exhausts me is going to sleep at night wondering, is all of this worth it? Is my everything, if I give my everything right now, is that going to be enough? Am I you know, setting my family back by being here right now? Am I being a bad dad? Am I being a bad boyfriend? Like, that's what we were talking about. And so coming down to it, for Win in the Dark, it wasn't the opportunities under the lights, practice, games that were burning these guys out or creating that internal friction enough to quit. It was the moments when they were trying to go to sleep at night and they couldn't, or the moments that they were alone. That's when the truest friction was coming up. And so that's where the kind of the title of the book came from, is if you're going to get to your best, we need to not just hope that you're going to make it through and from a mental side. We need to train it specifically. And then what is the toughest mental challenge that we continue to see? We want to address that directly. Fear of failure, fear of judgment, all underpinned by uncertainty. And it's helping people to see you're not broken. You are not broken for having any of that. In fact, thinking that you are broken, which is where I was when I was a freshman, is what keeps you inside of this box, but rather seeing I'm not broken, but I can put some things in play to help me be more free. And that's hopefully, you know, kind of what the point of the book was.
Yeah, no, I love that bit, because when I initially heard the title Win the Dark, I'm thinking, okay, the dark that they're referring to is when I go into the gym, the lights are out and nobody, you know, the janitor's locked up and I'm in the dark working, like, you know, grinding, you know, like that's my, and then, you know, as I unpack the book, I'm like, oh, I like this. This is real. Like this is the dark, right?
Yeah.
And it's not, I mean, I think so often people talk about, you know, the grind and getting after it. But like you just said it right there, I think so many of us love that, actually, you know, and you hit on the head. It's just, that's not the hard part about this at all. Like, If we knew that there was going to be the returns on that investment, it would be easy.
We're going to take a break in our conversation with Lucas and come back next week to unpack winning your inner battles. In the meantime, I'd encourage you to check out his book with Joshua Medcalf, Win in the Dark, or head on over to their website, t2bc.com. Their work has had an incredible influence on my own journey, so check it out.